Northwestern University, in cooperation with the Mutual Broadcasting System, presents transcribed The Reviewing Stand. In 17 weeks, Northwestern University moves into its centennial year, 100 years of service to the nation and the great Northwest. The Reviewing Stand will present many programs of unusual interest. We invite you to listen. Today, The Reviewing Stand discusses the peacetime uses and problems of atomic energy. Our unrehearsed, give-and-take discussion will center around the use of atomic energy for heat and power and the means of accomplishing these applications. And now, our moderator, James H. McBurney, Dean of the School of Speech, Northwestern University, will introduce participants in today's discussion. Mr. McBurney.
Our speakers today are George Granger Brown, Chairman of the Department of Chemical and Metallurgical Engineering at the University of Michigan, and Director of Engineering for the Atomic Energy Commission. Mr. Farrington Daniels, Professor of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin. Sidney D. Kirkpatrick, Editorial Director of Chemical Engineering and Chemical Industries. And Paul E. Klopstad, Professor of Applied Science and Director of Research at the Northwestern University Technological Institute. So far as atomic energy is concerned, public attention has centered very largely on the atomic bomb. On atomic energy as a method of warfare and defense against its use. Today we discuss the peacetime uses and problems of atomic energy. Brown, what are the more important areas in which we may expect to use atomic energy? I'm talking now about peacetime uses.
Well, it seems to me that for peacetime application, there are really two fields of use. Perhaps the one of widest range of interest is in the production of special products, or isotopes, which might be useful in industry, or in science, and also in medicine. And along with the operation of these nuclear reactors, we always find that heat is given off. And if this heat is given off at a sufficiently high temperature, it can be used for useful purposes, or for the production of power. And therefore, the second use of atomic energy for peacetime purposes is for power, either as a byproduct of the reactor or possibly as a major objective under certain conditions.
Do you have anything to add to that, Kirkpatrick?
Well, I think we could detail the application of power, bring it down to a few points, such as the use in aircraft and ship propulsion. Both of which are active fields of interest today and are being investigated, and their peacetime as well as military applications.
Daniels, do you have a word on this?
Well, one might add that the neutron beams from these atomic furnaces are useful for scientific purposes as well. But the great hope from a general point of view is for the use of atomic power.
How sanguine are you, Klopstad, about these developments? You think they're practical?
Well, they're practical enough, given enough time and enough incentive. But as I see it, the development of power from the nucleus is a long ways off, because at the moment industry doesn't have the incentive, and besides, I don't believe that for years to come, power from the atomic nucleus can compete economically with power from our usual sources.
I agree with what Klopstad has said from one standpoint only, and that is if the power is to be the only purpose of the reactor. For example, at the present time, we know that the major purpose of these reactors, in fact, almost their exclusive purpose, is for the production of material for use in weapons. If we can combine this use of the reactors for the production of weapons with the use of the heat which is given off as a byproduct for the production of power, and that is certainly within the realm of the practicability within a few years, then the use of nuclear energy for the production of power seems to me to be an economic possibility in which private enterprise could be actively interested in a very short time.
Do other men go along with that point of view?
I would like to go still further than that. I feel that we do not know at the present time how competitive atomic power might be with present fuel power. We just haven't run pilot plants yet. We don't know how frequently the fuel has to be reprocessed. We don't know how serious the radioactive contamination of the machinery is. It might turn out that it's not as bad as we now feel. I believe that we should make rapid strides in putting pilot plants into operation to find out what the cost will be.
Well, you gentlemen are talking about these peacetime developments, power, heat, and the radioactive isotopes, as a byproduct of war production. In what sense would these be a byproduct? Explain that a little bit.
Well, in the production of plutonium, which is a major ingredient in our atomic bomb.
And that derives from uranium, I take it.
That is automatically produced when we operate a reactor on natural uranium. There is, of course, a large number of neutrons that may be available for other purposes as well. And these neutrons in the pile or the reactor can be applied to the production of isotopes. And in the course of this reaction, which takes place in the reactor, heat is evolved in all cases. Therefore, the heat is a byproduct. And I'm saying that if we utilize this heat as a byproduct, which is now being wasted, then it is economical to generate power from this heat.
Why isn't the heat that is being developed in the piles that are operating at the present time being turned to practical use?
Well, the only real reason is that the heat is absorbed at substantially room temperature. And in order for heat to be useful for generating power, it must be available at some elevated temperature, at say 900 or 800 degrees Fahrenheit. Therefore, it's going to require engineering development to operate these piles at a higher temperature. And once that is done, then the heat can be put to some real useful purpose.
It really constitutes an economic crime at the present time to be producing all this heat at a temperature so low that it can't do any useful work.
All it does, as I understand it, is to warm the salmon in the Columbia River. Mm-hmm.
Very slight.
Well, now, tell us a bit more about the use of heat. Am I to look forward, Daniel, to an atomic furnace in my home in my lifetime?
No. Small installations of atomic power will always be impractical. It calls for a large investment, a large unit. Central heating stations would be quite possible, but private furnaces and private automobiles would be out of the question.
How does this atomic heat compare with gas, coal, fuel oil, and electricity?
Well, in quantity, 1 pound of these fissionable materials, plutonium or uranium-235, is theoretically equivalent to a whole trainload of coal. This would might be worth $10,000, I suppose. But the chance of getting this into any useful form requires a very large capital investment. So these figures are misleading.
Well, now, let's get down to brass tacks on this, if we may. You talked about the possibility of a central heating plant for a city like Chicago, I take it. This is a byproduct of war production. Are we to look forward to that? Is that in the cards, Brown? Something of that sort?
Well, something of that kind, I think, is very definitely in the cards. I don't know whether the plant would originally be located in Chicago, but at least it can be located so that the power generated would tie in with the high-tension distribution systems of the various states, so that the power could be made available to various industries and cities throughout the country. And it seems to me that we can look forward to that happening in a relatively short time.
You think that's the case, Tom Begg?
Well, it could. I can't see industry putting any money into it, though, so long as there hasn't been a better defined statement of policy on the part of government as to where industry fits in the picture.
Well, now, before we come to that problem, and I think it is a problem, let's talk a little about the power usage here. I'll come back to you again, Daniels. asked you about my furnace a while ago. Am I to look forward to a car that's driven by atomic energy? Or to an airplane that's driven by atomic energy?
Small units would be absolutely out of the picture. Large units seem possible, theoretically are possible. A great deal of effort to the atomic energy program is now going into atomic energy for ship propulsion and for airplane propulsion. These are taken seriously. They will come.
As you mean to say, if you can make an atomic engine and put it in an airplane or in a ship,
that's right.
Well, why not in an automobile then?
Well, we'd have to have a large capital investment, and then you'd have to have 6 feet of concrete all around your automobile for shields.
Well, I can see that might be a bit inconvenient.
It'd be a little difficult to design a modern streamlined car around 10 tons of concrete.
How about these power developments? Do you go along with Daniels on that, Brown?
Yes. In general, it seems to me that due to our limitations of our present knowledge, at least, it does not seem that we can have a small unit such as you put an automobile or a bus. However, when we come to vessels, either airships or ocean ships,
of course, it'd be a little difficult to have a ton of concrete around an airplane, I was about to observe a minute ago.
Well, I think I can say that our knowledge of shielding is improving very rapidly, taking great strides, and we can perhaps get away from this limitation of 5 feet of concrete and use some other means of shielding the reactors. And when that is done, then, of course, the dead weight that must be carried by the vessel is greatly reduced, and it looks as though we can expect within a reasonably short time practical power units for special uses, such as submarines or airships. And when that is done, that means we have solved the technological problems of giving off the heat at high temperatures. And if we can combine that knowledge with the knowledge we have of these large piles that are on land for the production of military purposes, we then can get the heat from these large piles that are producing plutonium and utilize that heat for the generation of power. And it seems to me that these two developments ought to go forward hand in hand because each one will assist the other in solving the key technological problem.
Now, we haven't said anything about these isotopes and their possible use. You mentioned that as a second peacetime use, I believe. In opening the discussion. What are they? How would they be used?
Well, they're used in many ways. I think one of the other gentlemen here mentioned the use of isotopes for following chemical reactions and for following many scientific developments. Also, these products are useful as a substitute for X-rays in industry. You can take some of these isotopes around in a little box and hold them up against a steel tank and take an X-ray photograph of the structure of the steel tank while it's right in position. And developments of that kind are extremely promising for scientific and industrial uses. And I think there have been very important developments in the field of medicine. Perhaps others are more capable of speaking on that than I am.
Do you think that if the reactor had not been developed as a wartime emergency, we would still have had isotopes since we already knew before the war that some isotopes could be produced by accelerators such as cyclotrons?
Certainly. We can produce isotopes by...
So these are also a byproduct of the wartime development.
That's right.
Well, now, Kopstig a minute or two ago introduced what he thought was a practical problem involved in these developments. Who's going to finance all this? Is it essentially a government project? Is it something that private enterprise ought to get into? How about that subject?
Well, it's a little difficult to see clearly just what that the economic situation is going to be. If we are discussing this question on the basis of the government getting plutonium at as low a price or at a lower price than it is getting now by drawing industry into the picture, then we have a situation that might justify considerable development of power for peacetime purposes distinctly as a byproduct of plutonium production. If, on the other hand, the government suddenly lost interest in plutonium, it seems to me that the whole thing would either have to be dropped or else there'd have to be government subsidy purely for the one purpose, namely, of finding out how to produce power economically from uranium.
Do you accept that analysis, Sir Patrick?
I do. I think we should emphasize the fact that Brown brought out a moment ago that plutonium need not be bomb raw material 100%, but it could also be a source of power generated from natural uranium, and on that basis would industry, I think, could afford to put money into a project. I think right now we might mention what we had previously discussed in a general way, the proposal made by Charles Allen Thomas, the executive vice president of Monsanto, who last June, I think, at a commencement address, suggested that a plant of some 75,000 kilowatts might be built out in Idaho, an atomic furnace, if you will, and that furnace be supplied by the government with uranium raw material, which power would be generated, and that power would be used to produce fertilizers from the abundant supplies of phosphate there.